Marcus Aurelius Antoninus, the man known to history as Emperor City Antoninus, was born on April 26, 121 AD in Rome, the capital of the Roman Empire. She was born to Praetor Marcus Annius Verus and Domitia Calvilla during the Pax Romana, a time when the empire was mostly peaceful and stable. He was known as Marcus Catilius Severus at this time, a name that came from his mother's side of the family. His father was from Spain and was part of the Annius clan. As a noble in Rome's politics, he rose to the rank of praetor. With this title, you could do executive and legal work, but you weren't as high as a consul. Marcus was praetor when he passed away in 124 AD. As he had not yet been made consul, which required a minimum age of 32, he died before he was fully grown. The cause of his death, however, is not known. His mother, Domitia, was from a wealthy noble family with a successful political past. Her father, Calvisius Tullus, had served as president for two terms. Domitia went into the building boom of Rome with a lot of money that she got from her mother, who owned a big, successful tile and brickworks on the edges of the city. Following the death of her husband, Domitia never got married again. Following what was common for Roman nobles at the time, Marcus was given to a wet nurse soon after he was born. This was something that the famous historian Tacitus strongly opposed. It's not known for sure, but Marcus's mother had his sister, Annia Cornificia Faustina, a year or two after Marcus was born. Marcus's mother and biological grandfather, who was also named Marcus Annius Verus, raised him. They raised him as their own child. Because his grandfather wanted to make things happen, the Emperor Vespasian recognized the Annius clan and made them part of the noble class sometime between 69 and 79 AD. Marcus later wrote about his grandfather in his Meditations. "From my grandfather Verus, I learned decency and a mild temper." Marcus spent his early years living with his parents and grandfather on the Caelian Hill, which is one of Rome's seven hills and a wealthy area with views of the city to the north. The area was home to grand buildings like the Lateran Palace and the barracks of the Equites Singulares, or Imperial Horse Guards. He was also raised by his maternal great-grandfather, who may have been his step-great-grandfather, Lucius Catilius Severus. Marcus is thought to have had the most touch with him, even though nurses took care of, as well as the processions that went along with them. As Marcus did his job as a priest, he moved up the ranks and became a priest himself. It was during this time that an omen about his future rule is said to have happened. When the other priests threw their crowns on the god's couch, as was the custom, Marcus's crown fell on Mars's forehead, as if he had put it there himself, while the others fell in different places. Marcus would start to learn Latin from Trosius Aper, Pollio, and Eutychius Proculus when he was 11 or 12 years old. He would learn music and math from Andron, and language from the Greek Alexander of Cotiaeum. The Emperor Hadrian called him Verissimus, or truest, for his dedication and serious attitude to his studies. Another teacher, Diognetus, the painting master, is likely to have been the first person to teach Marcus philosophy. Marcus would later write about him and how he influenced him in his Meditations. Marcus was so affected by this way of thinking that when he was 12 years old, he was eager to embrace the simple life of a philosopher and wore a rough Greek cloak and slept on the floor. However, his mother stopped him, and he reluctantly agreed to sleep on skins. At this early stage, it looks like he was trying to follow the strict Cynic philosophy. Marcus put on the toga virilis, or dress of manhood, when he was 14 years old, most likely during the Liberalia holiday in 136 AD. He then became a man of the empire. As soon as he got the toga virilis, he would put on the plain white toga that men wear and take off the charm that he had worn around his neck since he was a child, and got from his father during the ceremony 9 days after he was born to make him pure. He would now drop the name Catilius Severus and take the name Annius Verus, which is his family name. Taking this step toward manhood made him a full citizen, ready to participate in public life even though he was still in school. Sometime after Marcus put on the toga virilis, Hadrian, who was often away from Rome, became interested in him and told Marcus that he wanted him to marry Caeonia Fabia, who was Lucius Caeonius Commodus's daughter. In 136 AD, Caeonius was a consul in office, and it is possible that he was the one who made Marcus an honored prefect of Rome during the Latin holiday. Albano was the site of this festival, which was outside of Rome. Because consuls had to be in the city to do their official work, Marcus was made governor to take over these tasks so the consul could be away for the festival. Marcus was very polite and civil when he was with judges and at Hadrian's dinners, even though he was old. Marcus would meet Apollonius of Chalcedon, who used to teach Caeonius and was a famous Stoic philosopher at the time, through his new link with Caeonius. This is also around the time that Marcus's sister married Ummidius Quadratus. Marcus's mother asked him to let his sister take a part of the inheritance his father had left him, and Marcus not only agreed, but he also said he was happy for her to take the entire inheritance and also get the full share of her mother's estate so that Annia wouldn't be poorer than her husband. Marcus, whose mother had clearly kept him from being greedy, said he was happy with his grandfather's wealth while he was still alive. Hadrian suffered a hemorrhage and almost died in the last few months of 136 AD, which brought the issue of empire success to the forefront. Hadrian didn't have any children, so he had to pick someone to take his place as emperor. He made up his mind and officially took Caeonius in as his own, giving him the name Aelius Caesar. Many people thought this was an odd choice, and because Hadrian had a history with Antinous, he may have done it because he liked the man rather than because he was good. Avidius Nigrinus, on the other hand, was put to death by Hadrian in 118 AD for what seemed to be his part in a plot to kill the new emperor. Nigrinus might have become Hadrian's son if he had lived, and since Caeonius married Nigrinus's daughter, it's possible that this was Hadrian's way of making up for his previous actions. But it seems more likely that Hadrian picked Caeonius because of his background and ties. Marcus's well-known family also helped him. The problem was solved, but not without killing. Hadrian told the other people who were trying to be his son to kill themselves. They were Servianus, Hadrian's brother-in-law who was 90 years old, and Pedanius Fuscus Salinator, Hadrian's grandson. While Servianus did what was asked of him, he later said in public that he was innocent and cursed Hadrian, saying, "May he long for death but be unable to die," before he killed himself. Caeonius' success was not to be, however. Hadrian decided that Caeonius should go on a tour of military service because the council didn't like this choice and because he had made a bad impression from the start. Caeonius was sent to Carnuntum, which is near the Danube, with proconsular power over the Pannonian provinces, to calm down the groups that were fighting with each other and win them back over to Rome. It was a short tour, and Caeonius returned to Rome in the winter of 137 AD and was set to make a speech to the Senate on the first day of 138 AD. However, not long after returning home, he fell ill and passed away later that same day, on January 1st, 138 AD, most likely from tuberculosis. It was time to talk about succession again, but this time Servianus's curse seemed to have come true. Hadrian was sick with dropsy and had to deal with the same problem again that had been solved 2 years before. He called a meeting of the Consilium on his 62nd birthday, January 24th, to settle the question of succession. This was after a few weeks of stress. After that, Hadrian chose Aurelius Antoninus to be his son. Antoninus would have to adopt Saonius's son Lucius and his married nephew Marcus in order to become a parent. But just like when Saonius was adopted, when Antoninus was adopted, it made people feel bad. Antoninus didn't have as much experience or status as other people in his time, and it was said that his adoption caused pain to many, including Marcus's great-grandfather L. Antoninus and Catilius Severus both served as consul in 120 AD, but Catilius Severus was older and had been in office longer. Severus was discovered to have his own plans in place to ensure his success. Eventually, he was taken from office and replaced by a nobleman who wasn't very important in Rome's political life. Antoninus was officially adopted on February 25th, the same day that Marcus and Lucius were also adopted. Marcus alias Aurelius Verus and Lucius alias Aurelius Commodus were their names at that time. Hadrian asked Antoninus to marry his daughter Faustina to Lucius, which strengthened the family ties even more. Marcus was said to have been shocked when he found out he had been adopted into the imperial family. This may have been because he was quiet, not greedy, and had been influenced by philosophy from a young age. He moved from his childhood home on the Caelian to a private house owned by Hadrian with a lot of reluctance. In the spring, plans were made for Marcus to become a real member of society when he was given the job of quaestor for the following year, 139 AD, along with Antoninus, who would be consul for the second time. It wouldn't have been rare for a child to hold office, but Marcus was only 17 years old when the minimum age to be a quaestor was 24. Hadrian stepped in and asked that Marcus not have to follow this rule. Marcus, however, was unfazed by the change and continued to be the kind and thoughtful young man he had been in his formative years, despite being raised not only in the political realm, but also into the royal family. Hadrian's health was getting worse, though, and he tried to kill himself several times. As his health got worse, he became angry and ended up moving to Baiae on the coast of Campania. Antoninus was given charge of Rome, but soon after, Hadrian asked him to go to Baiae because he was close to death. He died on July 10th, 138 AD, with Antoninus by his side. Following Hadrian's death, Antoninus was responsible for planning the private funeral. Marcus was in charge of reporting the emperor's death in public, probably organizing the public funeral, and organizing gladiator fights on his own initiative in honor of Hadrian. Marcus's aunt Faustina told him that he should break off his engagement to Saonia Fabia and instead agree to marry Faustina the Younger, who is the daughter of Antoninus and Faustina and is much younger than Marcus, Claudia Fabia. For this to happen, her engagement to Lucius would have to end. Marcus agreed, but because Faustina was too young, they wouldn't get married until 145 AD. Later, in 138 AD, Antoninus would fight against the Senate to have Hadrian made a god. Although a large portion of the ruling class opposed this, Antoninus was successful in getting the motion passed, which also secured his own position. His actions in easing many of Hadrian's last acts won him favor with the Senate, and for this he was said to have been given the name Pius. However, this name may also have come from the fact that he went into the Senate to help the old Annius Verus. So, the job of running the empire kept going. During the year 139 AD, Antoninus and C. Brutius Praesens and made some changes to the people who were in charge, but the empire was mostly calm and safe. Marcus did what he was supposed to do and became quaestor. He mostly worked as a secretary and read the emperor's letters in the Senate when Antoninus wasn't there. Antoninus bestowed many awards upon the young Marcus. He was made consul for 140 AD, even though he was still a long way below the normal age standard for the job, and Antoninus was to work with him. Besides this, he was made Severi in the yearly parade of knights, and was also made head of the horse order, which made him the Princeps Juventutis. In honor of his place in the line of succession, his name was changed to Marcus Aelius Aurelius Verus Caesar until he became emperor. Marcus was also admitted to the schools for priests by order of the Senate. He was still a calm young man, even though he didn't have Caesar's power yet. He would later write, "See that you do not turn into a Caesar. Do not be dipped into the purple dye, for that can happen." Even though he was ready to take on the responsibilities of his new job, he didn't want his new position and power to change who he was. This way of thinking was only strengthened when, at Antoninus's request, he moved into the House of Tiberius, the imperial palace on the Palatine. More awards and jobs came his way, but Marcus kept going to school despite his public life. Marcus had many teachers over the years, and it's possible that he started learning how to speak well when he put on the toga virilis. He learned Greek from Annius Maker, Caninius Sella, and then Herodes Atticus. He learned Latin oratory from Cornelius Fronto, though Herodes and Fronto probably didn't teach him before Antoninus adopted him. It was Lucius Volusius Maecianus who taught him law. His older teacher, the Stoic Apollonius, returned to Rome at Antoninus's request to teach Marcus once more. Philosophy was included in his schooling. When called to the palace, he replied, "The teacher shouldn't come to the student should go to the teacher." As a result, Marcus would learn at Apollonius's house in Rome, though it's not clear how much of this was connected to philosophy at the time and how much to public speaking. In a set of letters between Marcus and one of his most famous teachers, the famous lawyer Fronto, he writes as a young man who is eager to learn and thankful for his tutor's help and sometimes criticism, which Marcus gladly took and was determined to learn from. He shows anxiety about writing his thank you speech to the Senate in one letter, but he also frequently showed his love for his teacher and felt bad that he had hurt Fronto by going to Centumcelli from Rome, where Marcus stayed for a while. He was even ready to skip some of his studies to avoid hurting Fronto even more. Marcus worked hard in school, but he wasn't afraid of it either. He writes to Fronto again about a day he spent picking grapes and working with the guys in the fields at one of Antoninus's country farms. Marcus was very serious, but he did get into some trouble sometimes. He also writes about going down a narrow road and coming across a group of sheep blocking the way. A shepherd warned the sheep to be careful of the riders because they steal the most. Marcus then stoked his horse and rode at the sheep, who ran off in all different directions. The shepherd threw his stick, but it missed Marcus and hit another part of his group instead. During the year 140 AD, he became consul, which gave him more duties. The consulship was the highest rank in the Senate, and Marcus would play a key role in helping to run Rome as part of his tasks. He learned how to run a government here, and Antoninus had a big good effect on his life, which you can see in the many books he wrote about his foster father. Even though he wasn't particularly interested in war, this experience would have served to teach him in some way about war-related issues, because he was likely present in his capacity as consul at talks about trouble in Britain and Dacia. The Empress Faustina died near the end of the year, and Marcus was probably involved in getting ready for her state funeral and worship. When Marcus learned that Herodes and Fronto were going to be against each other in a case they were both arguing for, his early exposure to political negotiations and studies in philosophy may have served him well. He wrote both men letters in which he made the case that they shouldn't attack the other man's character, even when they were protecting themselves. Fronto kind of agreed, but he insisted that the horrible crime had to be punished and that it didn't have to be done by smearing the person's reputation. Even taught Marcus a lesson by giving him a small scolding for having dictated the letter instead of writing it himself. No matter how they felt about each other, both men would become consul in 143 AD. However, Fronto would only be suffect consul for the months of July and August, because he was a novus homo, or new man. Marcus was once again not in Rome at this time. He was in Naples. Marcus was made consul for the second time in 145 AD, and Antoninus was once again his partner. He would help put down an uprising in Mauritania during this time, and he wrote to Fronto to worry about how much writing was involved. Lucius, Marcus's adopted brother, probably got the toga virilis earlier that same year, but not much is known about his school years. Because Marcus and Faustina were part of the noble class, Antoninus would have presided over the confariatio event when they got married in April. To honor the couple, coins were made with their faces on them. Even though Marcus was always ready to learn, by 146 AD, he was getting bored with some subjects and discussing his dislike of some of Fronto's later assignments. So, by early 147 AD, when Marcus was 25 years old, his official schooling would come to an end, and his interest in philosophy would grow even more. Quintus Junius Rusticus, who was the son of a martyr to Domitian's rule, had a significant impact. Marcus learned a lot from philosophical lessons, but it was his bonds with people like Claudius Severus and Claudius Maximus that really helped him grow. Another important figure was Sextus of Chaeronea, who was a philosophy teacher and never became famous. Marcus would keep going to his classes even after he became emperor. Each of these men would be mentioned in Marcus's first book of Meditations, along with his other most important teachers. There, he would write about what he learned from them. But 147 AD was a big year for Marcus, because it was the year his first child with Faustina was born. This gave him more time to study philosophy. During their marriage, she had at least 13 more children, though, as was usual at the time, many of them did not make it. As soon as the babies were born, Faustina was given the title Augusta, and Marcus was given the tribunician power and imperium. For some, this might have meant a time of military service, but not for Marcus. Antoninus didn't have much experience in the service abroad, and he didn't think Marcus needed to either. Both Antoninus and Marcus refused to go on any trips while Antoninus was ruler. In 148 AD, Rome celebrated its 900th birthday with Antoninus's fancy public games. Around the same time, a new king took over in the east as Parthia. This would cause problems for Marcus during his own rule. In the year 149 AD, Marcus and Faustina had twin boys, which was the start of a hard time for them. The babies' births were celebrated, and the year's coins honored them. But by the end of the year, both babies had died and were buried in Hadrian's tomb. The next year, another girl was born. Between 150 and 156 AD, Faustina had many sons and daughters, but only two of her daughters are shown on imperial coins from that year. Marcus lost another family member when his sister died in 152 AD. His mother Domitia also died after 155 AD, but the exact date is not known. Three more children, a son and two daughters, were born between 157 and 160 AD. Unfortunately, his son would not make it. During this troubled time, Marcus kept in touch with Fronto through letters, but the papers that have been found do not address any of his losses. It is with this in mind that Apollonius had told him that loss should be borne. During this time, Lucius became quaestor in 153 AD and then consul in 154 AD, both before they turned the necessary minimum age. However, Marcus had already been given these honors earlier. The adopted brothers had different personalities. Marcus was serious and didn't seem to enjoy combat shows as much as Lucius did. The two brothers didn't seem to be competing with each other, though. Most likely, Marcus's duties grew as Antoninus got older. In 160 AD, he shared the consulship with Lucius. However, Antoninus died early in 161 AD after a short illness. To sum up, Marcus was going to take over the empire. But after being approved by the Senate, he refused to assume the emperorship unless Lucius was also made emperor. He did this, in part, out of duty to Hadrian, and maybe also so that the work of running the country would be divided. The Senate also agreed. Marcus had played his public role for many years, but he still didn't want to live this way. But because he was well-educated and had studied philosophy, his sense of duty overcame his dislike. The adopted brothers shared power. Marcus was the senior ruler and was called Pontifex Maximus, while Lucius was called Pontifex. They would be called Imperator Caesar, Marcus Aurelius, Antoninus Augustus, and Imperator Caesar Lucius Aurelius Verus Augustus from then on. The Praetorian Guard, who were the emperor's personal bodyguards, had the power to make or break a leader. After killing Caligula in 41 AD, they had to be told that they would be loyal to the new emperor. Following Claudius's lead, Marcus and Lucius gave the Praetorian Guard 5,000 denarii, each, and the officers a larger amount. This was the first time Marcus and Lucius would be called Imperator together, this time by the Praetorians. The troops would cheer for Marcus as Imperator 10 times during his rule, each time for a different victory. There was no resistance from the Senate to making plans for Antoninus's funeral and worship, and his ashes were buried in the tomb of Hadrian. After the process of deification, Marcus told Lucius that his daughter Lucilla was going to marry him, even though she was too young to get married yet. In late August, Faustina had another set of twins. Their names were Antoninus and Commodus. But the trouble-free first few months of their rule were not to last. In the latter part of the year, the Tiber River flooded badly, damaging buildings, drowning a large portion of the city, causing famine, and causing a major malaria outbreak in the city. People in famine-stricken areas were able to get food from the city and money from the treasury, but an earthquake in Cyzicus made the empire finances even worse. The Tiber had a history of floods, but no real steps were taken to protect the city over the years, even though there were talks about it. Marcus did try to fix this, but the problem was never fully fixed. The eastern edges of the empire were now in danger because of these mishaps. When Antoninus's son, Vologases IV, became king, he struck Armenia, which was under the protection of the empire. He got rid of the ruler and put someone from the Parthian royal family in his place. M. Sedatius Severianus led one legion into Armenia in his role as governor of Cappadocia, but was stymied by the Parthian general Chosroes. His legion was wiped out when he realized he couldn't win the fight and killed himself. But the trouble wasn't just in the east. Britain was on the verge of war, and the Chatti had attacked Upper Germany and Raetia. Marcus and Lucius had no military experience to base their future choices in matters of war on, an area of their education that was severely missing due to decision. Marcus changed the current Ab Epistulus with T because he knew he needed people who knew what they were talking about. A man named Varius Clemens had a long and interesting career in the military. Statius Priscus replaced the dead Severianus, who was in turn replaced in Britain by Sextus Calpurnius Agricola, and Fronto's son-in-law, Aufidius Victorinus, was sent to Upper Germany as governor. The remaking of key posts continued. Some groups, including three full legions, were sent from the northern borders to help the people in the east, but the Parthians' invasion of Syria led to even more loss for Rome. Sometime between late 161 and early 162 AD, a decision was made to send Lucius to war. He was picked ostensibly because of his physical strength, which would make him better suited to military work, but it could also have been done to build and change him. Marcus would stay in Rome because he still had to run the empire. Lucius was not to go by himself, though. He was to take some Praetorians and M with him. A man named Pontius Laelianus, Larcius Sabinus, was made comes Augustorum, which means king's friend. He had a successful military career. Marcus knew he could count on him for useful advice in the eastern area because of his years of experience. Marcus would also send M, his first cousin, Annius Libo, who would become governor of Syria and keep an eye on Lucius's actions. Marcus traveled with Lucius for part of the journey when he left later in 162 AD, but when Lucius got sick, Marcus rushed to his side. People thought Lucius had a small stroke, but he got better and kept going on his journey. He finally reached Antioch, the capital of Syria. In the meantime, Statius Priscus came to take leadership and had some success in Syria and in the capture of Artaxata, the capital of Armenia, in 163 AD. But he isn't mentioned in government records for a while after this, so no one knows what happened to him. Marcus kept writing to Fronto even though the war was hard on him. In one of his answers, Fronto comforted Marcus that the war could turn out well for them, just like it had many times before. On the other hand, Lucius seemed to be enjoying his experience. He didn't take part in the battle, and he spent most of his time doing fun things at places outside of Antioch. He did not seem to be changing as hoped. Instead, he seemed to be enjoying his time away from Rome, even taking a lover. However, he would take the initiative in educating troops in Antioch who had become complacent after years of peace, and by taking his job seriously, he eventually became a part of camp life. Marcus made the decision to move the wedding of his daughter Lucilla to Lucius earlier than planned in 164 AD, possibly influenced by rumors of Lucius's lover. By Roman standards, Lucilla was old enough to get married, even though she was only 14. Marcus took her to Brundisium, where she got on a ship with M. Vetulenus Civica Barbarus, Lucius's uncle on his dad's side, and they left for Ephesus. In the months that had passed, Libo had died, and Barbarus's presence may have been meant to control Lucius's temper. Lucius would meet Lucilla in Ephesus, where the wedding would take place. Lucilla would be called Augusta, as she became a junior queen. During this time, when Rome took back control of Armenia, the capital was moved closer to the borders of Roman land. Lucius made Sohaemus, a senator and Arsacid prince, king of Armenia. This made a pro-Roman leader stay in power and brought back the client state. Marcus didn't want to participate in the title of winning Armeniacus at first, but Lucius finally got him to agree. Marcus was probably of the opinion that the title wasn't his to earn. Rather, it belonged to those who had played a part in the win, given his thoughtful nature and the fact that he didn't fight in the Armenian War. But Marcus didn't do nothing in Rome while everyone else was fighting, and his background in law would now help him. Evidence of his legislative changes, particularly in the areas of manumission of slaves, appointment of guardians for orphans and children, and selection of council members for the provinces, is still present. It was because of his work that public registries were set up. These were run by the prefects of the Treasury of Saturn and kept track of the names of all freeborn children born in Rome and the provinces. If anyone ever questioned whether or not a person was born free, these records would show that they were. He increased the number of court days where cases could be heard and decided to 230. He showed a lot of respect for the Senate by giving them the power to judge in probes, even when he was the one who should have been doing it. He also tried to be fair in every case. He showed respect for the Senate by giving them more awards and benefits. Many of his predecessors had ignored them and relied more on their military might to maintain their power. In 165 AD, the war with the Parthians continued, and they kept pushing into Osroene. They had made some progress in the area during the earlier part of the campaign, and now they had taken King Edessa and put the pro-Roman man Lord Manus back in power. It's likely that Martius Verus went after the Parthians, who were running away to the east, while Avidius Cassius led the attack to the south. When the army got to the twin cities of Seleucia and Ctesiphon on the Tigris, Seleucia let the army in. After this, the Parthian capital, Ctesiphon, was taken and Vologases' house was set on fire. However, Vologases himself was not caught, and he continued to rule as Parthian king. Even though the people of Seleucia were happy to see the troops, the city, which had been created by Greeks almost 500 years before, was destroyed, which hurt Cassius's image. Lucius got ready for Fronto to write the history of the war by asking Cassius and Martius for notes, and he also suggested writing his own account. The war was almost over. His pride showed when he told Fronto that he thought his accomplishments could be blown out of proportion. Now, focus would turn to getting ready for the battles in the north, where turmoil was still going on along the border. Along with the reorganization of the rulers of the northern provinces, two new armies were formed. At this point in time in 165 AD, Marcus lost another child. It was the bigger twin son, Antoninus. It was decided that Faustina could go to the east to be with Lucilla, who was pregnant at the time. This may have been because she was still upset about the death. At the same time, Fronto lost his wife first, and then soon after, his younger grandson, whom he had never met. Marcus sent his regrets in a letter. He didn't show any sadness for his own child's death, but he did say that he was very upset that his master was in so much pain. In 166 AD, Cassius would turn back to the east and push deeper into the Parthian kingship. He would go through Media and win more battles for the empire. The troops returned to their posts along the northern border after the Median War was over, and Cassius was placed as the governor of Syria. Lucius then started his journey back to Rome. Before he could finish writing the Parthian history, Fronto would die soon after Lucius returned to Rome. While Antoninus was king, there was peace in Rome. In October, the Parthian war victory would be the first one in Rome in almost 50 years. Lucius asked that Commodus and Annius Verus, Marcus's sons, be given the title of Caesar, which was allowed. They would also ride in the processions. Marcus, who had already been offered the title before, delayed acceptance until Lucius had returned to Rome. Both Marcus and Lucius were given the title Pater Patriae, which means Father of the Fatherland. But the time it took to win the war in the east meant that problems on the northern border had to wait longer to be fixed. The groups on the northern edges of the border had lived happily with the Romans. But as people moved farther to the north, they had to leave their land because it was becoming too crowded, and they wanted to start over in the south, where the Romans already had control. The invasion by the Langobardi and Obii groups was stopped at first, either in late 166 or 167 AD. Balomarius, the king of the Marcomanni, sent messengers to Aelius Bassus, who was governor of Upper Pannonia. The envoys went home to their various groups after making peace and swearing oaths. Marcus intended to go to the northern borders, but he was unable to do so because a plague that had been spread by troops coming from Mesopotamia after the Parthian War had spread throughout the empire. Theories abound about what caused the plague. One said that scary fumes came from the Temple of Apollo in Seleucia. Another said that the plague was punishment for sacking the city of Seleucia after they proved to be loyal to Rome. Even though the disease hasn't been definitively named, its seriousness can't be overstated, especially in Rome, a city with a lot of people, and in the army, where there were a lot of deaths. Marcus made rules that said it was illegal to move or bury the dead, and for someone else to steal from graves that were already there. It was also against the rules to build tombs at houses. Marcus's presence in Rome during certain religious ceremonies only slowed down his expedition to the north, and problems were once again arising that needed to be dealt with. A lot of different priests were called to the city to perform foreign religious rites and clean up the city to calm down public anxiety. However, Lucius, who was consul for the third time in 167 AD, spent most of his time doing things that made him happy. He had many feasts at his house on the Via Clodia, and he asked Marcus to come. He brought players from Syria to the feasts. As usual, Marcus, being a good brother, agreed. To set a good example for Lucius, he spent his time there doing work for the court. But the plague made people dislike Christians. Many thought it was a punishment from the gods, and people who were thought to be Christians were arrested, tried, and killed. Marcus didn't write much about the Christians, but in one passage of his Meditations, he says that they accept their deaths not because they want to, but because they were trained to die. This goes against Marcus's own philosophical and Roman ideas about death. During Marcus's rule, this wasn't the first time it looked like Christians were being persecuted. In 165 AD, when Justin was being tried for what the cynic Crescens said he did, his friend Rusticus was in charge of the case. Five other people, including Justin, voluntarily admitted to being Christians. They were then slashed and killed, making Justin a martyr. There wasn't any peace with the northern border tribes. The Victuali and Marcomanni were still causing trouble among other tribes, and not long after the first peace talks, their king took over the gold mines in Dacia. This was because he was the king of the tribe's representative at the peace talks. Marcus and Lucius finally left for the north, even though they didn't want to, in the spring of 168 AD. They stopped in Aquileia for a while before continuing their journey. Marcus told people to build more forts along the borders, but Lucius was more interested in the good shooting in the area. So, when the news of a possible peace with the tribes broke out, Lucius, who wasn't too excited about going to the Danube, pushed the idea of returning to Rome. Marcus turned them down, so they went over the Alps for a short visit and stayed at Carnuntum before going back to Aquileia. Marcus had planned to spend the winter in Aquileia and continue the Danube campaign the following year, but the famous Dr. Galen advised a turn back to Rome because of the plague. Lucius persisted, and Marcus finally gave in and agreed to go back to Rome with Lucius. But Lucius would never go back to Rome. He got sick at Altinum, possibly from another stroke, and stayed there for 3 days before he died in January 169 AD. There were many rumors about the co-emperor's death. Some even said that Marcus, Faustina, and Lucilla were plotting against him individually, but none of them can be proven. Upon his return to Rome, Marcus handled Lucius's funeral and worship. Rome was already in a financial mess because of the war in the east, the plague, and the raising of new legions at the same time. More troops were needed to replace those who had died of the plague and to fill out the new legions, but this would still cost money, so Marcus didn't raise taxes. Instead, he held an auction of palace property and sold a lot of it to get the money. Auxiliary units were made up of former gladiators, slaves who got their freedom when they joined, and even bandits who were forced to join. Mercenaries from within the Germanic tribes were also hired, which helped with the cost of recruiting and equipping new troops. All of this wasn't enough, though, so the decision was made to lower the value of the coins, which is something that often happens when money is tight. Marcus's departure from the Danube was postponed until later that year, because he had to find a good match for his daughter Lucius's widow and then deal with the death of another child after surgery to treat a tumor. A lot of information about the Danube War was lost or never written down, but the Romans' first attack does not seem to have gone well. The Marcomanni were successful in pushing into Italy and making it as far as Aquileia, raiding villages along the way. Other tribes then made further attacks into Macedonia, Thrace, and Achaia. The exact date of the failed assault is unknown. Claudius Pompeianus, Lucilla's new husband, was put in charge of dealing with these attacks. He brought along Pertinax, who would become ruler for a short time. The Germanic tribes were pushed out of Italy, and the northern regions they attacked one by one. Eventually, at the end of the fighting season in 171 AD, the army caught the Marcomanni at a river crossing on the Danube, trapping them with a lot of spoils. Rebel Moors also attacked Baetica on the Iberian Peninsula at the same time. Aufidius Victorinus was sent by Marcus to deal with this invasion. He was the governor of both the Baetica and Tarraconensis at the same time. Because of this, Marcus lost the senatorial state of Baetica and gave it to Sardinia instead. Septimius Severus, who would become emperor, would serve after a time as quaestor in Rome. Marcus talked with a lot of different groups, including the Quadi, to drive out the ones that were most dangerous to the peace and security of the borders, like the Marcomanni. He even made some deals with other people. Some were allowed to live in the fields of Italy, but they were later sent back after a revolt at Ravenna. So, in 172 AD, Marcus was finally able to start the war again. They crossed the Danube and marched into Marcomanni land. Teams on both sides won and lost, but it was during this part of the game that Marcus is said to have done magic. The first said Marcus called down a lightning bolt from heaven that hit the enemy. The second one is about the wonderful rain. Dealing with the Quadi, who had broken the peace terms by hiding Marcomanni while he was on the run, they circled the Romans from all sides in hot weather, blocking their access to water sources and waiting for them to get tired before sending more people to overwhelm them. The Romans couldn't go back, so they kept fighting even though they were tired from the heat. The clouds suddenly moved in and it rained hard on them. This quenched their thirst and gave them strength to keep going. After that, the wonders were shown on the column of Marcus Aurelius, which can still be seen in Rome today. It would be Christian writers afterward who said that these wonders were caused by their own God, but pictures on coins and the column show that Marcus only gave credit to Roman gods. Marcus beat the Marcomanni before the end of 172 AD. The group was put under a lot of limits in a deal that was made. It is possible that Marcus's son Commodus was with him at the time of the win and was given the title Germanicus. Other parts of the empire were still experiencing problems despite these achievements. Egypt had a revolt, so Avidius Cassius was sent there from Syria to put it down. Sohaemus had been removed from power in Armenia, and P. The governor of Cappadocia, Martius Verus, was sent to put him back in charge as the pro-Roman leader. Tiridates was sent to Britain because he was thought to be the one who caused the trouble in Armenia. Marcus had planned to turn back to Rome in 173 AD, but the war with the Quadi and other smaller groups continued, primarily in a series of smaller battles. The last deal with the Quadi was made with their pro-Roman king, but he was kicked out and replaced by Ariogysus, who was against the Romans. Marcus wouldn't recognize him, wouldn't repeat the contract that wasn't working, and put a reward on his head, alive or dead. But, like Tiridates, Ariogysus was sent to Alexandria after being captured. When the Sarmatian Jazyges tried to ask for peace in 174 AD, the war moved forward and turned against them. Marcus said no, but not much else is known about this part of the effort. Marcus kept up with his legal duties when he had time, even though he was on the front lines. He had always taken these duties very seriously. At this point, though, it sounds like he might have had an ulcer since Dio said he had a chest and stomach problem. Galen gave him a medicine called a theriac or cure, which is thought to have contained opium, to help him feel better. Galen's papers show that Marcus would stop taking the cure because it made him sleepy, but then he would not be able to sleep and would have to start taking it again. This makes it seem like he may have become hooked. However, it is not thought that he became a junkie without any control like some others in history. Due to the lack of such important men from death during the plague and later battles, Marcus appointed many men who were not as wealthy or experienced to positions in the Senate and military command during this time. He is also said to have said a number of things about public issues, such as that public games would continue while he was away, and that mixed swimming would no longer be allowed. Marcus Aurelius began working on his meditations in the last 10 years of his life. They are thought to be his most famous and lasting work, a set of 12 books that he wrote himself about the philosophy of Stoicism. Stoicism is a form of philosophy that focuses on positive emotions and lessens the use of negative emotions, which builds character. The meditations are a collection of his thoughts and feelings about his time running for office and running his campaign. His purpose was to use them and improve himself, and they were written in Greek. Marcus set goals for himself that, by today's standards, seem impossible to reach. He also wrote about how pointless, cruel, and short-lived everyday life and other people were while still doing his job. Some people think that the images and ideas in his meditations might have been caused by the medicine he took to treat an ulcer, but there is no proof of this. Some people think that his meditations are one of the best books ever written, even though they were based on the ideas of Stoicism and weren't really new intellectual works. Questioning and analyzing oneself, following morals, and staying focused even when there are distractions are some themes that come up in the meditations. Being able to live in harmony with the logos or order in the world, and seeing both success and failure as neither good nor bad in and of themselves, is another theme. The Sarmatian campaign continued in 175 AD. Its goal was to make the lands of the Marcomanni, the Quadi, and the Sarmatians into regions of the empire. Marcus had previously trusted a man to handle matters in the east, but now he would have to deal with a bid for the emperorship from him. Once Avidius Cassius had put down the herdsmen, or brigands from the Nile Delta, who had risen up against the Romans, he called himself emperor. Some people think he thought Marcus was dead, but this hasn't been proven for sure, and it could have just been an easy way to shield his actions. There would also be a lot of talk about Marcus's wife being involved in this plan. It was agreed that Cassius was ruler in the Egyptian city of Oxyrhynchos. Egypt was one of the most important Roman regions. It was known as the breadbasket of the empire. Augustus had earlier said that senators had to get approval to enter the country. Because of this, Marcus's rule could have been seriously threatened by support for Avidius. He was made a public enemy by the Senate, which made people afraid that he would attack Rome to get back at them for making that decision. Marcus sent a force to protect the city and collared Commodus, who had returned to Rome during the Danube War in part to prevent this. Marcus maintained control over the army and praised the virtues of loyalty to his soldiers. At the same time, he raised Commodus to the rank of Princeps Juventutis, which confirmed him as heir. Cassius's 3-month stint as a fake ended when he was killed by one of his own guards as Marcus got ready to embark on the journey east. Still thinking that he had to be in the east, he quickly made peace with the Jazyges without asking the council and sent 5,500 of the Sarmatian horsemen that had been sent as a gift to Britain. Faustina died in Cappadocia while they were on this journey to the east. Even though he wrote a lot about sadness, her death made him very sad, and he changed the name of the village where she died to Faustinopolis. The Senate made her a goddess, which may have helped protect her image against the many rumors that had been going around about her life, including that she had had many affairs. Marcus Aurelius was a very complicated person in history. Because of his philosophy and attempts to run the government in a fair and just manner, he is frequently referred to as one of the 5 good emperors of Rome. This is the section with the commas added. After dealing with Egypt, Marcus continued his tour of the East, stopping in Athens where he and Commodus were initiated into the mystic cults of Demeter and Persephone. They would later turn to Rome late in 176 AD. Marcus would now give his son Imperium, allowing him to take part in the victory, and he would have him excused from the Lex Annalis so that at 15 years old he could hold the consulship in 177 AD, making him the youngest consul up to that point. Soon after his return, he got sick and was treated by Galen again. This time, though, it didn't seem like a serious illness, because Galen said he had a stomach ache, and Marcus was well enough to take part in the victory in December. His triumphal arch, which the Senate gave him, does not survive. Although there was still fighting going on in 177 AD, Marcus remained in Rome and returned to his judicial and administrative responsibilities. As well as dealing with trials, Marcus spent time reforming laws again, including those on slavery and the provision of gladiatorial games, to relieve the burden on the upper classes who were required to fund them. Because so many trained gladiators had been drafted into the army, they were in short supply and cost a lot. To make up for this, Marcus let condemned criminals work as gladiators in the provinces. This was also the time of the persecutions of the Christians that led to the martyrs of Lyon. Christians who were accused were sent to the arena to be put to death by ordeal. One of the accused was a Roman citizen. Marcus seems to have stuck to the rule that if they denied their faith, they would be freed. If they didn't, being a Christian was a capital crime, so those who refused were to be beheaded. The Christians who died weren't buried because it was an important part of their faith, so they were later burned. Some people think that Marcus may have been manipulated into this persecution, but this can't be proven for sure. Marcus also had to deal with problems outside of Rome. The Moors, who had been pushed back before, had again invaded Iberia. Also, as earlier in his reign, there was another natural disaster. This time, an earthquake destroyed Smyrna. As the empire's finances began to recover, Marcus sent money to the city to help them rebuild. Gains were made against the Quadi and Marconi in 179 AD. Roman soldiers garrisoned parts of their territory and kept up pressure, which caused the Quadi to break and retreat north. Marcus, the last of the five good emperors, was known for his just and fair rule. Despite his initial reluctance to assume the emperorship, he had long been prepared for it, and he did not back down from the challenge. He did much to reform Rome's laws and was instrumental in enacting new legislation that benefited the general populace, including slaves. He was also generous in helping those who were the victims of the numerous natural disasters that occurred during his reign. Marcus was modest in his interactions with the Senate, as few of his predecessors had been, and because of his lack of military training, he relied on the advice of those with more experience in matters of war. Although he did not openly declare himself a Stoic, he upheld the wisdom of the ideals through his everyday actions and exemplary morals. The meditations of Marcus Aurelius are not only valuable and insightful in their meaning, but also provide us with a rare glimpse into the mind of an emperor. If anything outside of you hurts you, it's not that thing itself that bothers you, but your own judgment about it. This is an example of a quote from the Meditations. You have the power to cancel this decision right now. In no way can he be viewed as cruel or tyrannical, as some of his predecessors were, and yet under his rule, the persecution of Christians continued. Although not directly sanctioned by Marcus, he played no part in their prevention either, upholding the law of Christianity as a capital crime, clearly with no intention to include it in his reforms. His death would ultimately signal the end of the Pax Romana and Rome's Golden Age. Successive emperors, although some would try, would fail to hold up to his ideals, including his own son and successor, Commodus. In conclusion, Marcus Aurelius is a complicated person in history who is praised for his intellectual wisdom and many good things he did for the Roman Empire. But the fact that he persecuted Christians, even though he was generally kind and fair, is still a point of criticism and debate. His impact is one that historians and experts both admire and argue about.